Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your number one source for the latest in WWE news and straightforward analysis.
Are you ready to get this thing going?
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
Then let's get this show started right now.
What's going on, everybody, guys and girls? Welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter and on Instagram at MichaelRitter5. Also the host of the Football Function Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So, we're here to talk about the SmackDown that aired on June 4th, 2021. But before we do that, before we get into the SmackDown that happened, which was referred to by Michael Cole as the Night of Championships, I believe is what he called it at the very beginning of the show. So, not only are they just flat out acknowledging that they are just giving away championship matches, but they're, you know, they're embracing it. That's one thing I noticed whenever I heard him say that. That they're actually liking it. You know, they do think that that's going to be the thing that draws the viewers back is the championship matches. You could tell me they started the show. That was one of the first things that Michael Cole said whenever Roman Reigns was coming out as the show was barely beginning. So that kind of just let me know, all right, now I kind of have a little bit more of an idea on how they want us to view this. But before we get into that SmackDown, I want to talk a little bit about the budget cuts, the releases that happened a little bit earlier in the week. I haven't really gotten to give my thoughts on those yet, and you know, my thoughts align pretty much with everybody else, probably like your thoughts, the listener. Basically, I don't understand it. I mean, Braun Strowman, I was not a Braun Strowman fan at all. I mean, especially here lately, I was definitely getting a little bit tired of, you know, what he was doing on Raw. I felt like, I mean, saying that his character has no depth is just putting it mildly. I feel like there's a lot of stuff he needed to work on. His mic work, I felt like, was definitely below average. I was not a fan of how he constantly put his mouth on the microphone, which I understand. That's just probably what he does. I mean, it's not just his fault. It is his fault, but it's not like that's a detriment to his character. You know, like, that's not something obviously you should fire somebody for. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that's one of the little things that kind of rubbed me the wrong way about Braun. But ultimately, I was surprised that they let him go. I mean, you guys all know it. He was just in a championship match. Like, what the hell? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. It just tells me, like, does WWE really change the plans that often? Like, for them to just flat out fire somebody who was just in championship plans? Who, I mean, literally, before it happened, on the last time I saw Almost, I still can't pronounce his name. I'm glad he's not on SmackDown because I probably butcher that every single week and call him something different. But I'm calling him Almost for now. Whenever I saw him in the ring this past week on Raw, I genuinely thought to myself, man, I feel like at some point we're going to get a nice program between Omos and Braun Strowman, and it's going to be booked as just these two giants who are unstoppable whenever they're on a collision course, they finally collide at some point, and they have a good blow-off match, whatever it was. That kind of just, you know, that crossed my mind. I was like, well, that's something I'll buy into at some point. And then literally the next day, he's fired, or maybe 2 days later. I'm not sure the exact math. I think it might have been on the Wednesday that all that happened, but that was crazy. I mean, last week on SmackDown, moving on from Braun Strowman a little bit, turning the page to Aleister Black, who's another even more shocking release. Not necessarily more than Braun Strowman, but me personally, given that I cover SmackDown, I didn't really mention that he wasn't featured on last week's episode of SmackDown, where the week before was whenever he made his return, and which I thought was done very well. And then he hit the Black Mass on Big E. I thought that that was setting themselves up for a Big E versus Aleister Black program. And then the next week, they didn't even talk about it at all. And for some, I guess I just didn't notice. It must have just completely missed my radar or something, because I didn't even mention that on the show. So that's definitely on me. But this week, we hear that he's released, and that's whenever, you know, it all starts to kind of come back. Like, oh man, he wasn't on the show this week. So that's why. I guess that they had already been planning this or something, at least for like the week, because you wouldn't be planning it 2 weeks ago. You wouldn't have brought him back in the first place if you knew you were going to do this. You probably wouldn't have started the whole Dark Father character if you knew that you were going to do this. So that alone tells me that it's just, I mean, if somebody could wake up one morning and just say, I'm not feeling what he's doing today, I'm going to go ahead and release him. Because What was your reason for releasing Aleister Black? I mean, if your excuse is that, well, we just didn't have anything for him, then that's on you. That's your fault. Aleister Black is so talented. Like, I don't watch really any other programs outside of WWE. I don't watch AEW. I don't watch New Japan. I don't watch Impact, anything else. So basically, like, if somebody leaves WWE, more than likely, that's the last I'm going to see of them. Like, I haven't really seen Miro or Rusev in AEW, including all the other guys. I mean, just real quick off topic, I did see that Andrade now is at AEW, so I feel like that's a good addition for them. He's in that same boat as Aleister Black. I mean, he can compete anywhere. He just wasn't really given the opportunities here in WWE. But back to Aleister Black. Speaking about how I don't watch other promotions, he's a wrestler that I liked so much, and I was so glad whenever SmackDown drafted him that I would go watch it. If he goes signs with AEW, that might be the final piece that says, you know what, I guess this is something that I should probably add to my weekly routine just because, I mean, it has so many talented wrestlers on the roster. Just looking at guys like Kenny Omega, now Andrade. If you bring in Aleister Black, I mean, they also have Jon Moxley and a lot of other wrestlers as well. But if you bring over Aleister Black, and I know AEW just isn't going to get all of the leftovers from WWE, but Aleister Black's a guy that I feel like any other company should be lining up and calling his agency, whatever. I'm not sure what the whole contract situation is, if he has like a no-work clause in his contract or whatever since he did get released. I don't know exactly how that works. I'm not going to pretend I do. I didn't do the proper research to actually give an educated opinion on how that is going to play out. But I just know that whenever you're speaking about talent, Aleister Black's damn near at the top of the list. I mean, he's somebody that even in NXT, whenever he was there, he caught my eye. Just his character. I've never once seen like an Aleister Black bad match. I haven't seen him have like a bad promo or something like that. Anything that he's really done that didn't, you know, get over with the fans, likely it was because of, you know, booking whenever or creative. Whenever he got his eye poked out or whatever at the corner of the steps by Buddy Murphy, which they did actually reference. They gave him a white contact whenever he made his return. So it shows that they were actually trying to do a little bit of storytelling there. And it's just all more shocking. It's just crazy to me. I mean, I still really can't wrap my mind around the fact that they're just letting people go left and right. And it just almost seems like, when's it going to stop? Is it going to stop? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know every year they have this. I mean, it's like that in every sport. Black Monday exists in the NFL. Coaches get fired. Players with big contracts get cut closer to the free agency period. It happens. You know, I mean, it's just part of the business whenever you're in a competitive business like this and you make a very large salary. Things like this happen. Although I will say, if they're referencing money being the reason why they're doing this, and that's just a load of you guys know what I'm trying to say. You know, that's BS pretty much, because I mean, we all know how much money WWE makes, and there's ways to get around that. I'm sure that wrestlers or performers, whatever you want to call them, I mean, in sports, they do restructures. They ask them, hey, are you willing to take a pay cut so we can keep you here and keep you employed? Because we're in this situation right now where we have to do something financially. And I don't know if that's what's going on in WWE. It's just weird. I mean, there isn't a salary cap. So I guess that's what I don't understand, is why you would let such talented athletes, performers, wrestlers, superstars, whatever you want to call them. I mean, this is a profession. And some of them are the best in the world. Like Aleister Black and Andrade, I do not care who is arguing against it. And I haven't really seen anybody who said, you know what, WWE had a good reason to release those guys. If I were to see that person say that, I would respectfully tell them that they're a stooge and a sellout, because basically that's just not right. I mean, I can't wrap my mind around it, honestly. I mean, I wish all of these guys the best. Lana's another one that got released. Ruby Riott, that's one that just... Man, I'm high on Liv Morgan. You guys know that. The Riot Squad, I feel like, should be the tag team champions right now for the women's division. And they're not. And I understand that Natty and Tamina, it's just their time. But still, I mean, you have no women's tag teams left. And you have a division dedicated to that. And there's nobody. You have Mandy and Dana Brooke and Natty and Tamina. Who else? I mean, are you going to count Shayna and Nia Jax, who we've all been begging for them to get split up since... What was it, like January? We've all been just clamoring, all right, you need to split this team up. They don't work well together. Shayna Baszler is getting misused in this tag team. And now it does seem like they're kind of starting to go their separate ways, which now there's no tag team division. There's literally two teams. So I genuinely do not know what they're going to do there, especially because now you have NXT Women's Tag Team Champions. So you can't just say, all right, well, now I feel like we can just be more active with utilizing all three brands with these tag team divisions, because that's what they say. Those tag team belts are like a portal for you to go to, from brand to brand to brand. Well, now that there's two of them, what's the point in going to NXT? There's not one. They already have their own tag team belts there, which tells me that they might be trying to back off a little bit from that whole three brand thing that they were doing with NXT as a true third brand, which I do feel like NXT is a true third brand, but it's just weird. The fact that they gave them their own tag team belts, just, I mean, that kind of, that closes the door from, you know, back whenever Sasha and Bayley were the women's tag team champions and they were making appearances on NXT. And I do believe that Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler also went to NXT. They fought Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. So, I mean, now you can't do that anymore. It just closes that door. So now you're forced to have not only one, but two women's tag team divisions in WWE whenever you include NXT and the main roster. So I just don't know what they're going to do there. It's a wild turn of events. I mean, hopefully they have something up their sleeve. Hopefully they don't just, you know, plan on just winging it, you know, waking up one day and say, oh, I guess we're going to release some more people. Like, I do hope that there is a plan, that they maybe plan on bringing some more people up or something, because it's just, it's wild to see this happen so often now. I mean, the fact that there was like a second Black Monday or whatever day you want to call it. I mean, because the night after WrestleMania or just the week after WrestleMania, you basically know that this is happening. So to get blindsided by this, at least from a fan's perspective, I did not see this coming. So that's, I guess, where I'm coming from, is that I hope that this doesn't become a more regular thing. Once a year is plenty, man. I mean, you're a billion-dollar business, multi-billion-dollar business probably. So, I mean, it's just wild that they're just cutting people like this, especially people like Braun Strowman and Aleister Black. Those are the two that it's going to take a while for me to truly understand why, you know, because, I mean, just last week whenever it happened, I listened to the Raw review, Matt's Raw review with Michael Gross. I listened to that show after I found out about the cuts already, because, I mean, I don't know why. I think I was just a little bit busy. So I listened to the show a day late, and they were talking about Lana. They were talking about Braun Strowman, you know? So, I mean, it's just weird hearing them talk about him and knowing that like 18 hours later they were fired. So, I mean, it's a wild business, man. I mean, just, I guess it's something that we all just got to get used to and just keep moving forward and just wish them all the best, because it's not something that's going to stop anytime soon. But I know that was a bit of a long-winded opening segment there, kind of talking about those cuts, but I did have some opinions on it. It's not something that I enjoy seeing, and I'm not going to go any more into it there, but just basically wanted to explain why it took so long to get through there. But without any further interruptions or anything else that we need to talk about, we will get right into this SmackDown review. And this one starts with Roman Reigns coming to the ring with Paul Heyman. And he says right away that he changed his perspective, basically, on how he views this tag team championship match that the Usos have tonight. And the reason why he changed his perspective is because, according to him, he got some special counsel from a very wise man, referring to Paul Heyman. So basically, what he means by that is that last week, you can tell that he was visibly upset. He even admitted that he was not happy whenever SmackDown went off the air, because, you know, he felt like, I mean, I don't know if it was just from a sense that they were being disobedient, or maybe just, you know, doing whatever they want as far as going after those tag team championships, whenever he feels like, as the head of the table, maybe that decision should go through him first, or something along those lines. He doesn't want Jey Uso to be relegated back to that tag team division whenever he's been main eventing all these months. So whenever he says that his perspective changes, he then says that now he's looking at it from a standpoint of, if you're going to call your own shot, then you better deliver. And that's what he says, because he demands that the Usos come out to the ring. And they do. And then he says, after Jey Uso walks up and says, "What's up, head of the table? What's up, tribal chief?" He looks at Jimmy and says, "All right, it's your turn now. Acknowledge me." And then Jimmy basically says, "You know, I already did. I acknowledged you at Hell in a Cell whenever you choked me out, whenever you choked out my brother. So, I mean, does that not count as me acknowledging you?" And then Roman Reigns basically continues on by saying that, you know, their whole family is going to be watching tonight, and they know that. So if you say you're going to win, then you better win. And Jimmy and Jay, you know, as confident as ever, say, you already know we're going to. I mean, welcome to the USO Penitentiary. And then SmackDown goes to commercial break. We come back and we get that tag team match. And this one's actually pretty long. I mean, it's not like crazy long, like a 30-minute match or anything like that. But it did last about 15 minutes. And it ends with some – there were two roll-ups on tonight's show. But neither one were just a true, you know, sneak up from behind and roll them up. So this is kind of, you know, what I was referring to last week whenever I said that the way SmackDown went off the air was just the worst roll-up I've ever seen. Or, excuse me, at least the worst – way to book it, where Dominic was the one who got the roll up, and it was only because Rey Mysterio came out and his music played and distracted whoever was in the ring. So I went on record last week by saying that that was one of the worst roll ups I'd have ever seen. The two that were on this show weren't really like that. They were actually, you know, they kind of had to maneuver their way into the roll up, and they were clearly having to force the other person down. And it was just, it was different. I mean, there's one a little bit later in the show, and there's one in this one right here, where Jimmy Uso's shoulder wasn't down on the mat whenever the referee made the three count. But because the referee couldn't see it, he ends the match and makes the Mysterios the winners, and obviously they retain their tag team championships. The camera shows Roman Reigns watching backstage, and he, you know, he just demands Paul Heyman bring them to me. So SmackDown goes to commercial break. We come back, and Jimmy and Jay are in there basically rambling, pleading their case, telling them, hey, I know you were watching the match. You saw what happened. My shoulder wasn't down. We should not have lost that match. And then Roman Reigns basically hears enough. He screams, which was kind of weird, basically screams at the top of his lungs to get them to shut up. And then he says, look, I don't care what happened out there. You didn't deliver. You called your own number and you failed. So the show's not over. It actually just started, so you have plenty of time. You better do something about this. I don't care if you got to go talk to Sonya Deville. I don't care if you got to go talk to Adam Pearce. Do something about this by the end of the night. And right after this, he actually calls Jay Jimmy on accident, supposedly. We all know that he did it on purpose, but Jay kind of just has this little response like, hey, I'm Jay, like as if you don't already know that. But anyway, I didn't really like that. And just on a little side note here, I don't know if it's because of the presence of Jimmy alone, but I feel like Jay, since Jimmy has been back, his confidence has kind of gone down a little bit. And that's just my, you know, my view on it. And they could be doing that on purpose just to kind of play into Jay being reluctant to this whole thing and him being really uncomfortable with just the idea of disappointing Roman Reigns, but also disappointing his brother. And he's just kind of torn. He's in a bad spot. But I don't know. I feel like if that is the case, then Jay's doing a damn good job. But if not, then it's obvious that the presence of Jimmy, it does make Jay's confidence take a hit, and I don't know why. It's just weird to see. I feel like that shouldn't be the case. I feel like the presence of your brother should make you more confident. It should make you more comfortable with what you're doing out there. But we do get that. Roman Reigns demands that they go talk to Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville, and we will get there here in just a second. But before we do, we have a couple backstage segments. The first one is the Seth Rollins interview with Caleb Braxton, and this was just strange to me. I don't know why. I just feel like Seth Rollins was acting super weird. He took his mic off and handed it to her at the end, and she was just asking about Cesaro, so I don't really know. Seth wearing another suit, another unique suit, so that's just kind of his thing now. I just didn't really know what to take from this. He kept smiling and just looking off into space. He felt disrespected for whatever reason by Caleb Braxton for even asking him. So there really wasn't an interview. This kind of didn't get anywhere, but I just thought that it was strange the way that Seth Rollins was acting. So something that we can kind of pay attention to and see if they are going to continue to do that, or if Seth Rollins is going to give us a little bit of an explanation. Another backstage segment that we have here is, let's see, Chad Gable. He approaches the Street Profits. And basically, he just tries to get them to join the Alpha Academy. For whatever reason, he says they can, or he can make them go to the next level. And he tries to get them to join himself and Otis. They reject, and obviously Chad Gable does not appreciate that. But now we get to that other backstage segment, which is the Usos approaching Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce backstage. And they're basically just trying to get them to do something to fix what happened out there, because they did technically get cheated out of their win, because Jimmy's shoulder wasn't down. Well, according to Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce, they still need to look at the footage. Right now, they say that the ref's decision is final, but they need to look at the footage, and then they'll see what they can do. So you guys all know what that means, and we'll definitely get to more of this, or more of this stuff, this segment, this program with the Usos trying to get their rematch tonight. We will get there a little bit later in the show. Up next, we get another match. This one is between Carmella and Liv Morgan, the now official singles competitor, Liv Morgan. And you guys all know, when it comes to women's wrestlers, she is by far my very favorite. So I was interested to see what they do here, and I liked what I saw from Liv, because they kind of started off with, you know, both of them cut a pre-match promo. Carmella was saying that she's the most beautiful woman in WWE. I definitely disagree with that, and so does Liv Morgan. She says that, according to Liv, she said Carmella's a 7 at best. But anyways, she comes out, and they are about to, you know, just lock up like normal and have a regular singles match. But Carmella gets really disrespectful with it. She slaps Liv Morgan in the face and kind of pushes her face away multiple times. And that really brings out the, you know, the edgy side of Liv. She goes to the outside of the ring, starts throwing her into the barricade, throws her face off the side of the apron. Just a brutal match. You know, it was one of those, you know, for women's wrestlers who really don't have any type of grudge with each other, I feel like this definitely kind of reached that level. Carmella does eventually win. She makes Liv Morgan tap out to the code of silence. And I guess we'll see what happens from there. I mean, both of these women are kind of just walking in place, I guess, right now. Carmella really doesn't have a direction. I hope and pray that Liv Morgan does, because that's one name that I do not ever want to see kind of pop up on these budget cuts or whatever you're talking about. Because and Liv's one that, I mean, she kind of fits that description. She doesn't really have anything that WWE, you know, can do with her. She hasn't really been utilized all that well. She's tried different types of characters, just whenever you're talking about her original character, which was like that Jersey girl, who, I mean, that's what she really is. She's really from New Jersey, so it's not like she's doing like a gimmick there, but that was her first character. And then she kind of went to that, you know, I don't want to say like lesbian character, but that's pretty much what she was whenever she was, you know, trying to do that whole relationship with Lana type thing. And she was coming out in like those business suits, which that didn't last long at all. And then obviously the Riot Squad, both versions of the Riot Squad, the three women group, and then just strictly her and Ruby. And I do feel like there is a little bit of a difference between the two, because not only is her gear very different, but it's like 2 years separated. So, I mean, she's a lot better in the ring, and she's only getting better. I've already said, I do feel like, obviously, Jeff Hardy is so much more polished. He's so much more experienced, and it's unfair to compare somebody to him. But if you're just talking about styles, I do think that Liv Morgan has a little bit of Jeff Hardy to her. And obviously, she's not going to be doing swantons off the top of the stage or anything like that, but just, you know, that reckless approach to how she does and just throwing her body around and stuff like that. I don't know. It's just something that I see, and I could be off there, but I do like to make some past and present comparisons. But moving on, we see the Mysterios. They're shown with their bags packed, dressed in their street clothes, trying to leave the arena. And they're approached by Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville, who informed them that the referee made a mistake and that they have to defend those championships tonight in the main event. And Rey Mysterio's like, you're kidding, right? Like, are you serious? But Dominic, who is the true fighting champion of the group, he actually says, no, you know, it's all right, Dad. We'll do this. We'll fight those guys again, whatever. So no, they just turn around and they walk back holding hands to their locker room. Not really holding hands, but you guys know what I mean there. A little bit of a joke towards Rey and Dominic always having to be all over each other for whatever reason. I mean, good Lord, can we just get a little bit of a pullback on that? But up next, we get Bianca. She comes to the ring and she challenges Bayley, which is weird. I mean, I feel like they've been doing that more often with babyface champions, where they just go to the ring and they're like, you know what? No one's challenging me for my championship, so I'm going to go challenge somebody right now. Who wants a shot at my championship? And I feel like that's kind of what Bianca did there, although there are reasons to why she doesn't like Bayley. I mean, she talks about how Bayley's laugh is really starting to get under her skin, and how basically Bianca's heard it all from people calling her mannish, to her being really, you know, muscular and athletic, to people saying that she needs to tone herself down because, like, how confident she is. She says she's heard it all, and that Bayley isn't the first person to try to step to her and to try to challenge her. So she basically says, all right, Bayley, I want you one-on-one at Hell in a Cell. And then Bayley pops up on the Jumbotron laughing like usual, and then eventually turns all of the monitors in the Thunderdome to Bayley's face. And you could just hear her laugh coming in through the speakers. It was actually pretty crazy. It feels like it was something taken from the Fiend's playbook. Like, kind of just one of those things where it's like, what the hell? Like, even though it's Bayley, just seeing that would be kind of weird. But up next, we get, let's see. Oh, yeah. The Street Profits are shown backstage. And then Otis is kind of just like walking by them, like pacing back and forth. I kind of noticed out of the corner of my eye. And then he basically tells the Street Profits that they need to apologize to Chad Gable for disrespecting him earlier in the night. And then they tell Otis that Chad's been holding them back and that he really hasn't accomplished anything since aligning himself with Chad Gable. But and after that, they basically tell him that he needs to quit the Alpha Academy. Otis doesn't like that. And I don't feel like it was really a cheap shot because they were literally looking right at each other. But he did. I mean, he straight up dropped both of them just right there. He just punched Montez Ford right in the face and then took out Angelo Dawkins as well. But, I mean, I just thought that was kind of weird. It wasn't like a cheap shot or they didn't even get any offense at all, like a fight back. It was just he dropped Montez Ford and then went right after Dawkins after that. And it does seem like at least storyline-wise, they might be, you know, trying to act like Montez Ford got knocked out. And it could just be my first impression that I got from that because a little bit later in the show, they show Montez Ford and Dawkins where they cut a little bit of a fiery promo, much more serious than they usually do. And Ford has to basically ask Dawkins what happened. He's like, wait, so let me get this straight. Otis hit me in the face because we told him that he is better without Gable. So, I mean, he kind of had to ask what happened a little bit. So I kind of got that idea that maybe he just didn't know what happened, but I don't know. I do expect that we're going to get next week the Street Profits versus Otis and Gable, the Alpha Academy. So that's one match you could probably go ahead and put in pin that we're going to get that next week on SmackDown. But a match that we got tonight on SmackDown was Baron Corbin and Shinsuke Nakamura. Shinsuke obviously being introduced by Rick Boogs again. And this was the other match where it ended in a roll-up, and Baron Corbin got the win. And it was kind of weird. He put his, like, he had Shinsuke Nakamura's feet pulled. Like, he folded him in half. But he was on, like, Shinsuke's head side. Like, it was kind of weird. Like, sometimes they'll fold him in half and they'll just kind of put all their weight on their body so they can't get out. But this time, Shinsuke, like, he had his face, like, right in Shinsuke Nakamura's ass. Like, it was kind of weird. Like, I would have definitely went for a different pinfall if I was Baron Corbin. But, hey, it worked. He got the win. And for a little bit there, he got his crown back, and he started taking off with it. But Rick Boogs came to the rescue and tripped him up as he was trying to make his way up the ramp. And Shinsuke Nakamura catches up, eventually gets his crown back. So, yeah, I mean, that's just all it is. They're making this strictly about that crown. And that just tells you right there how serious they're taking all of these characters, which is a damn shame for multiple reasons. Shinsuke Nakamura, I said weeks ago that he was one of the few people on SmackDown. I think I referenced three guys on SmackDown who, if booked properly, that's the important part. I'd put that in caps and underline. If booked properly, can be legitimate enough to take that championship off Roman Reigns at some point, not anytime soon. And I'll get to that here in just a little bit whenever we talk more about Roman Reigns and how long I think he might be able to go on this championship run. But just whenever you're talking about Shinsuke, man, do something with this guy, dude. Like, move him over to Raw if you have to, because Raw needs some babyface heel or babyface top babyface, I guess you could say, is what I'm trying to say. Raw needs babyface characters. And why not give him Shinsuke? If that's all you're going to do here on SmackDown is have him be in the mid-card with Baron Corbin, I feel like you can get a lot more out of him maybe on Raw. So if we got to do a little bit of a trade, get Shinsuke over there and maybe take somebody from Raw. I haven't really looked at their roster to see what would work out and make it make sense for both sides. But anyway, that's just something I feel like can be beneficial for Shinsuke, or maybe even go back to NXT, you know, like kind of do that Finn Balor role, bring up Finn Balor and then take Shinsuke down, kind of just do a little bit of a swap there. But obviously Finn Balor, if he comes up to the main roster, he's for sure going to Raw. But anyways, and that kind of, you know, the same goes for Baron Corbin. Obviously not to the same extent, but he's somebody that I feel like is getting underutilized. They're kind of doing the same thing with him from like 2018 to 2021. Baron Corbin has been the same dude, like just not taken seriously at all. So I don't know. I'm not going to get my hopes up and think that they might do something with him different. But I mean, from what I hear, Vince McMahon absolutely loves Baron Corbin. So he's a guy who you can see being safe with the company, despite not having any serious programs or anything, you know, to hang his hat on. As far as just on his resume, you know, I mean, he's won the King of the Ring, the Money in the Bank, which he unsuccessfully cashed in. So he really doesn't have anything that, you know, is noteworthy on his resume that he can brag about and hang his hat on. So I guess we'll see if he eventually gets that. But up next, we get what was supposed to be the Intercontinental Championship match with Apollo Crews and Kevin Owens. Commander Aziz banned from ringside. Kevin Owens is making his way to the ring, and he's attacked from behind, or just cheap-shotted in general, by Commander Aziz. He takes him out before the match even begins. Apollo Crews is kind of just standing off in the distance, just laughing at it, because he knows that, yeah, Commander Aziz isn't allowed to be at the ring, but he still made his presence felt and made sure that I'm not going to lose this championship. He just did it before the match begins, which I guess, I mean, is all right. I mean, there's nobody's going to get in trouble from this. I mean, Commander Aziz isn't going to get a fine or suspension or have to be forced to be, you know, outside of the building the next time they fight for this championship, if they do fight for the championship again, because we kind of get a little bit of a transition for Kevin Owens here in this program. Because just as far as this match itself, it does happen. Kevin Owens limps to the ring to fight Apollo Crews. And Apollo Crews is in there waiting for him. And it did last a little bit longer than I expected. Usually whenever somebody goes to the ring after being attacked backstage, they don't have a lot left in their gas tank. You know, that's they usually end up taking a quick loss and it's protected because, hey, they shouldn't have even gone out there in the first place. They just got their ass kicked backstage. So if anything, it just shows a lot of heart. That's usually the perspective that WWE tries to show. Well, they made this match go a little bit longer than I expected it to. Pretty physical. Apollo does eventually win with a Death Valley driver on the side of the apron. And let's see here. After the match is over, Sami Zayn comes out and hits a Helluva kick on Kevin Owens and basically just screams, saying that karma is the reason why this happened to him. He shouldn't have even gone out in the first place. He was already injured. He decided to do that, and he got what was coming to him. So, obviously, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn is not over yet. We are going to get them at least in another match. Why not just do it at Hell in a Cell? Honestly, I mean, this is clearly a grudge match. You give them more time on a pay-per-view where they can actually deliver and make a good match. But part of me kind of thought whenever I watched this attack happen, would they put these two in a Hell in a Cell just because of the type of match they can have? Obviously, the history, the rivalry that they have. I don't think they've had a Hell in a Cell match in their career yet. Either one of them, like, not just against each other. I don't think either one of these guys have been in a Hell in a Cell. And I could be wrong there. If anybody has, it would be Kevin Owens. But I don't think that either one of them have yet. So I guess I could see them doing that. Just, I mean, it just really depends. I don't think that they should. I feel like there should only be one Hell in a Cell match. If there's ever more than one, it's just strictly because of the stupid pay-per-view. But I liked back in the day, and I know I referenced the Ruthless Aggression era multiple times on the show, but whenever they would just put a Hell in a Cell match on a random pay-per-view. Like, I remember specifically Shawn Michaels versus Triple H at Bad Blood, Hell in a Cell, and it was the main event. You had all these other matches, and then bam, they just dropped the cell. On a regular pay-per-view, it doesn't have to be called Hell in a Cell. So hopefully this will be the last year that they do that. I don't think they will, but I'm going to try to speak into existence. Bring back some of the original pay-per-view names. Get these stupid gimmick match pay-per-view names out of here, dude. Nobody wants to see a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, a TLC pay-per-view, an Extreme Rules pay-per-view, Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. Like, I don't even want to see a Money in the Bank pay-per-view, but it makes sense at least because, hey, whoever wins this match gets a championship opportunity whenever they want. So at least there's some logic behind that one. But the other ones, yeah, I will never be behind that ever. And I will forever be trying to get WWE to make the right decision and get those stupid pay-per-view names out of here and bring back the ones that weren't broken in the first place. Up next, we get the Tag Team Championship match, the main event, which is a rematch from the match that happened a little bit earlier in the night with the Usos and the Mysterios. And this one obviously is much quicker than the one earlier in the night. This one kind of goes by in about like 6 minutes, 6 or 7 minutes. And basically, the Mysterios take control late in the match after Rey hits a 619 on Jimmy Uso. And then Dominic gets in perfect position to hit a frog splash on Jimmy to get the win. But Roman Reigns comes out of nowhere, stops that by hitting a Superman punch and causing a disqualification. So right after that, all hell basically breaks loose. I would say it was a brawl, but normally a brawl means multiple people are fighting multiple people and it's just, you know, chaos. But in this particular moment, Roman Reigns was just beating the hell out of everybody. After he beats Dominic up, Rey Mysterio obviously tries to come and protect his son and attack Roman Reigns. That doesn't work out for him. He ends up getting his ass beat as well. Outside of the ring, Roman Reigns hits both of them with, you know, the steps. multiple times. He even asked Rey Mysterio, "You're going to let me beat up your son like this?" And then proceeds to hit him with the steps and then throw him over the barricade. Gets back in the ring, pulls Dominic in there, and then chokes him out. He literally has him just in the headlock while Dominic's standing there fighting, screaming to get, you know, released. And then eventually you just see the life leave his body and he passes out. Jimmy Uso the whole time, as Dominic was starting to fade, was telling Roman Reigns to let him go. Say, "Hey, man, it's enough. You know, we don't need to do it like this. Let him go." And then he finally tells him, "He's out, dude. Just let him go." He finally does. And then Jimmy shows that he's visibly upset. And he tries to get his brother to leave with him. And he says, "Man, not like this. We don't have to do it like this." And he leaves the ring. Jay begins to try. Roman kind of gets in his face. And then turns around and starts beating up Dominic one more time. Just actually, you know, just pounding on him on the mat. Just delivering elbow shots to his face. It was a brutal little ending for Dominic. I mean, Dominic definitely took the rough end here. Not quite as bad as his kendo stick experience, but I mean, this one was a little rough. I'll say that. Roman Reigns definitely welcomed Dominic to the main event picture. If you're going to be involved with his programs, then you're likely going to have something like this happen at some point. But that's kind of how SmackDown goes off the air. Roman Reigns looking dominant, saying, "Yeah, one week you might get the better of, you know, the situation where it looks like I don't get my way. But you better believe the next week, I am going to make right on that situation. I promise. I'm going to have the last laugh." So I like that from Roman Reigns. And like I said a little bit earlier, whenever we mentioned who's going to take the championship off of him, that's just something I feel like we don't even need to think about. I mean, I know that, I mean, sometimes it's hard not to whenever you want to look into the future and kind of fantasy book. But me personally, this is not going to end anytime soon, in my opinion. I feel like Roman Reigns is going to hold this championship until somebody who might not even be on the roster yet. Just somebody who comes to mind who I feel like might be, you know, legit enough to do it. Maybe Karrion Kross down on NXT at some point, bring him up, and then let those two guys go at it. That'd be something I wouldn't mind watching. But just, I don't think that they should. I mean, right now, they have the ability to go full Triple H, JBL, just have this heel champion hold this belt for 2 to 3 years. He might lose it here or there, and I hope not, but there's a chance that Roman Reigns can have this Universal Championship for a very long time. And if that's the case, you can just sign me up for it because he's my favorite men's wrestler. I got a picture with Roman Reigns. He is, without a doubt, one of my favorite people on the roster. You guys already know, I was a fan of Roman Reigns whenever he was getting booed out of every single arena, whenever people were hating Roman Reigns when he was a forced babyface character. I still supported him. And I know that it's not necessarily saying like that's smart. Like, wait, what are you talking about? Why would you support somebody that the fans don't even like? Well, sometimes you just get caught up in a character. You know, I mean, I love the Roman Reigns character. So for as long as he's around, I'm going to be a fan of him. So I'm looking forward to seeing how long he can actually hold this Universal Championship. And the longer, the better, in my opinion. But thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. I really do appreciate it. If this is your first time listening, I really, really do want to thank you for choosing this podcast. I know there's a lot out there that you could be doing right now. So the fact that you are taking me with you with whatever it is that you're doing, it definitely means the world to me. If you're a regular listener, thank you for making this part of your weekly routine. I certainly hope that you'll continue to come back and continue listening to this show because SmackDown is good, man. SmackDown is a hell of a show. As far as WWE TV goes, I feel like NXT does get the edge a little bit, or at least it did there recently. Or at least for a while there. Here recently, I'm not really sure, but leading up to NXT Stand and Deliver, I feel like they were the ones that had that momentum. They were the ones that had the crown as the best show right now. And I feel like NXT and SmackDown kind of pass that back and forth for which show is the best right now. And I don't know. I mean, when you have Roman Reigns on your roster, it definitely, it helps. I guess you could say that. But once again, I want to thank you guys for listening to this. And walk passionately in the direction of your dreams. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.